best with confidence.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Coming up, we're going to hear what some of what President Trump said yesterday as he campaigned in Estero, Florida, near Fort Myers, not too far from here. And we'll also hear a bit of what Bernie Sanders told USF crowd yesterday in Tampa as he was campaigning for Andrew Gillum. And we're also going to talk about the humanitarian crisis in Yemen, too. Later on, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. First, one listener comment about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we got into a discussion about the president's decision, at least attempt, to do away with birthright citizenship. Here's what one listener had to say.
Sarasota about today's show regarding birthright citizenship. I think if we're going to get rid of the 14th Amendment, we might as well get rid of what's inscribed at the base of the Statue of Liberty.
Comment about yesterday's program. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And as you know, there is a ongoing controversy about the U.S. role in Yemen. The U.S. has military involvement in Yemen. And right now we're going to speak with a professor at Michigan State University, Shireen Aladimi. She's lived through two civil wars in her country of birth, Yemen. She's played an active role in raising awareness about the U.S.-supported Saudi-led war on Yemen since 2015. And she's encouraging political action among fellow Americans to bring about an end to the U.S. intervention in Yemen. I spoke with her just a few minutes ago, and here's the interview I did.
Bob, it's Boomer checking in from Sarasota about today's show.
That's not it. Here's the interview I did with Shireen Aladimi, who is an opponent of the Shireen war. Aladimi, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Shireen, let me ask you, you're from Yemen.
Yes, I was born in Yemen.
How many years did you live in Yemen?
I grew up between Yemen and India until the age of 12 when we moved to Canada. So I was in Yemen, I think, for a total of 7 years.
Do you still have family in Yemen?
I do. I have uncles, aunts, cousins, friends.
I think a lot of people are surprised in the wake of the Saudi journalist. A lot of focus now is on the fact that the U.S. is backing the Saudi side in Yemen. I think a lot of people here in the U.S. are surprised that the U.S. is involved in a war in Yemen.
Right. I think one of the real, you know, tragedies over the last few years is that even when people heard about the war in Yemen here in the U.S., it wasn't made clear that the U.S. is part of the coalition that's bombing Yemen, that they're part of the Saudi-led coalition. And this isn't just the U.S. supplying weapons, which, of course, is a big deal, but they're also, you know, training Saudi soldiers. There are U.S. special forces on the ground in Saudi Arabia, the Yemen-Saudi Arabia border. The U.S. military is refueling Saudi jets midair. They're helping them with targeting. So they're holding their hand all the way through. And so they're not just involved, but they're heavily involved. They're, you know, in Yemen, this is considered a U.S.-Saudi war in their country.
On whose behalf are we fighting? Are we fighting on behalf, is the U.S. fighting on behalf of the Saudis? And who is on the other side?
Well, on the one side, there's the United States. Saudi Arabia led the war with the United Arab Emirates. And they assembled a coalition that's made up of several wealthy Arab countries, like, you know, previously Qatar and you know, even Jordan and Egypt and Morocco and so on. But the U.S. and the U.K. and France have played a heavy role in supporting that coalition through intelligence sharing and in other ways that I mentioned previously. It's even difficult to call it a war because on the other side, you have the Yemeni population. I mean, the Yemenis don't even have an air force to defend themselves. What happened was that the so-called UN-recognized Yemeni government is in exile in Saudi Arabia, and supposedly the Saudis are you know, fighting Yemen to restore legitimacy to this exiled government. But that's not what the majority of the Yemeni people want. And so you have Yemenis being attacked by this foreign coalition, and it's turned into what was initially a civil war, turned into an international intervention.
Why do the Yemeni people not want the government in exile to return?
So the government in exile, it was not an elected government. It was an appointed government. In 2011, Yemen went through a peaceful uprising. This is during the time of the Arab Spring. And that essentially was co-opted by various other groups who saw, you know, a vacuum in power. But there was a settlement that was reached. It was a UN-mediated settlement, and it appointed, this President Hadi, who had previously been the vice president of Saleh, who the Yemeni population revolted against. And he was appointed in a one-man election, essentially. There was no election, to a two-year term. His two-year term expired, and then he was appointed for an additional year, and in those 3 years, he really failed to make any progress. And so then various groups within Yemen started trying to apply pressure on him, and this is when Saudi Arabia got involved, and then he fled to Saudi Arabia. So he's not even able to come back to the country. You know, he makes official visits once a year or so, and he has to stay offshore, and there's heavy security because he has no legitimacy from the people.
Hmm. We're talking with Shireen Al-Ademi. She's a professor at Michigan State University. She was born in Yemen, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We often hear about two major problems in Yemen. One is famine, and the other is the killing of civilians. You said a moment ago that the people in Yemen who are fighting against the Saudi-backed forces don't really have much money or arms. Tell us about the famine, and tell us about the killing of civilians.
So, again, this is done with U.S. support, U.S. targeting support, and the Saudis have been bombarding Yemen for the last 3.5 years. They've not left any site untargeted. They've targeted homes and hospitals and funerals and weddings, and even, Doctors Without Borders supported hospitals have been bombed at least 4 times. And, you know, any kind of gathering of people, they target moving vehicles, they target people in their homes. And so the casualties from that is really staggering. It's upwards of 56,000 people. We've been hearing a 10,000 figure for so long, and now we're finally learning that figure is much more. And, you know, there's a lot of casualties. Many children have been killed as well. And then there's, of course, the blockade. So Saudi Arabia decided that it's not only enough to bombard the Middle East's poorest country. Yemen is one of the poorest countries in the world to begin with. And in addition to the bombardment, they began blockading the ports and the entryways, the land, air, and sea entryways and exits into the country. And so the food that comes into the country is very limited, and whatever is there, people can't afford because, you know, when there's a collapse in the economy and people have lost their jobs and their businesses and their salaries, they're not able to afford what little food remains. And so this is where we have the famine and the starvation. Yemen doesn't grow its own food. We used to rely 90% of the food that came into Yemen was through imports. They've been using starvation as a weapon, essentially, and have starved out at least 113,000 children so far in just the 2 years of the war, not even the full range of the war. I don't know what the total figures are. Probably, you know, at least 200,000 people who've died of hunger. And then, of course, there's the preventable diseases like cholera. There's the world's worst outbreak of cholera in Yemen right now. Over 1.3 million people have been infected with cholera. Again, because people don't have access to health care, they don't have access to clean water.
What you're outlining is a humanitarian crisis.
Well, the UN says this is the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. And if this famine, you know, that's around the corner, looming around the corner, actually manifests, then it'll be the worst famine the world has seen in modern history because, you know, we're talking half the population of Yemen is under threat of starvation. That's 14 million people.
What impact do you think the murder of Jamal Khashoggi had on illuminating, on kind of shedding the light on the fact that this war is going on, that this famine is going on, this crisis is going on?
Well, I think what it did is shed light on the brutality of the Saudi regime. This crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, who was said to have ordered the execution of Khashoggi, is the architect of the war in Yemen. He's the crown prince. He's a defense minister. And this is the war that he started, you know, in a way to make himself known when he was first appointed to his position. And I think it shows just the level of brutality that this regime is capable of, and then the cover-ups and the lies and all of that. This is what they've been doing in Yemen, except, you know, they've held the whole entire population hostage, and they've been murdering children and women and people just for existing and using starvation as a weapon. I think it's up to us, and it's up to the news media to make that connection between, you know, Khashoggi and Yemen, to say that these are the same people who are committing these crimes in Yemen, and nobody really was paying attention to what they were doing in Yemen. Davos in the Desert, this investment conference, went on last year and the year before without anybody pulling out or anybody really saying anything about associating with Mohammed bin Salman. When he came to the U.S. earlier this year in March, he was treated like royalty. He's met with presidents and business people and celebrities alike. And so, you know, nobody really was talking or, you know, talking about his role in starving an entire population. And so I think what's important now is to realize, well, now we know what they're capable of. There's no hiding what they've done to Khashoggi. And it's time to stop our support of these people who are essentially war criminals. We should not be helping them destroy a country.
President Trump seems to be very concerned about arms sales to Saudi Arabia. He seems to look at it as a business deal that he wants to protect. Does that business deal, does that result in the killing of civilians in Yemen?
Absolutely. This is not just under the Trump administration, but also under the Obama administration. The, you know, the weapon sales and the contracts that they have in Saudi Arabia, the military contracts, all the training and the updating of vehicles and aircraft, all of the stuff the U.S. gets paid for by Saudi Arabians. And that's worth millions and billions of dollars in weapon sales in addition to that. And so both Obama and Trump have been very protective over their business relationships with Saudi Arabia. Perhaps Trump is a little more transparent about it than Obama was. But at the end of the day, civilians are being killed, and they're being killed in brutal ways, and they're being starved to death. And to what end? There is no end to this. All Saudi Arabia wants is to occupy Yemen and to take over the, you know, Yemen has a strategic location. They, Bab al-Mandeb Strait is where about 3-4 million barrels of oil a day pass through. And so Saudi Arabia needs to control that, and they want to have a government in Yemen that serves their interests as they had in the past. And so, you know, but I think the cost to human life is so staggering that those should matter much more than weapon sales.
Our guest is Shireen Al-Adeimi, who's a professor at Michigan State University. She was born in Yemen. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. A lot of people talk about a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. To what extent is the war in Yemen a part of the proxy war? Or do you agree that there's a proxy war out there?
Absolutely not. I think the Saudis have been using this line of reasoning to try to justify why they are in Yemen, because otherwise, you know, what are they going to say? We're trying to occupy a country. And so they've been using Iran as this, you know, they've been saying that we're trying to fight off Iranian influence in the region. And yes, Iranians have influence in Yemen, but not to the extent that the Saudis are making it out to be, and not to the extent that the American government is making out to be. I mentioned earlier that there's a blockade in the country, that you know, Doctors Without Borders, for example, or Save the Children, or the UN, they have a hard time bringing in shipments of aid and food and medicine into the country because everything is under Saudi control. People are trapped in the country and they die because they can't have access to cancer treatments or dialysis, for example, because the airports are shut down and they can't leave the country. But somehow Iranians are... we're told they're smuggling weapons into Yemen, and which makes no sense. And even if they were, you know, where are those weapons? What damage have they caused anywhere? And so I think this Saudi narrative has not been questioned, unfortunately, in the past, but I think it's time to really, you know, just question them on where is the evidence of any Iranian influence in Yemen to this degree. This is not a proxy war. This is a one-sided war in which Saudi Arabia has taken, you know, is trying to take control over this country.
Are U.S. military involved? Is there any evidence that U.S. military are involved on the ground? You mentioned refueling Saudi planes in the skies, but what about on the ground or working as advisors? Is there any indication the U.S. is involved on that level?
I'm not sure about on the ground. Of course, the U.S. is involved in other ways in Yemen that don't have to do with this particular fight there, you know, and it's under this fighting terrorism. And so maybe there are advisors who are there for that reason. But you don't hear about U.S. casualties because they're kind of just in the targeting room. And in Saudi Arabia, there are green berets in Saudi Arabia at the Saudi-Yemen border. But they're certainly advising, and they've made no, you know, they're not hiding that fact. They're not hiding that they're refueling or that they're providing targeting assistance or that they're maintaining and upgrading their vehicles and aircraft and training Saudi soldiers.
Yesterday, there was a call for a ceasefire by people in the Trump administration. They're calling for a ceasefire in Yemen. What do you make of that?
Well, what's going on right now is that Congress, there's momentum being built in Congress to stop this war. In the House, there's a resolution. It's called HCON Resolution 138, and it was introduced by Congressman Ro Khanna of California, and it invokes the War Powers Resolution, which means that they're trying to, if it goes through a vote, the U.S. is obligated, it's a binding resolution, they're obligated to end all forms of support to Saudi Arabia in this war in Yemen. And momentum is building. I think there are around 70 Congress people who have so far co-sponsored the bill. And Bernie Sanders is going to push a similar bill in the Senate, SJ Res 54, which he tried to do earlier in the year, but he's going to push through again this in this upcoming month. And so I think momentum is building in Congress, and perhaps this is, you know, the Trump administration's way to try to mitigate that situation before they're forced to stop all kinds of support to Saudi Arabia. But to make statements like that, to say, well, we need a ceasefire in 30 days, or we need everybody to, you know, stop assaulting civilians, well, the U.S., again, is party to the war. Why not just make an announcement that the U.S. will no longer be supporting the Saudi Arabians in the targeting, in the refueling, in all sorts of assistance that they have been providing them? I think that would be a bigger statement to make rather than pretend to be neutral observers to this war.
One last question, and that is that ISIS came out of radical Wahhabism, as I understand it, that the radical elements largely within Saudi Arabia funded ISIS in the beginning, and that's part of the group that the U.S. is supposedly trying to keep down in that part of the world. Is that what's going on in Yemen? Are we fighting? Is the U.S. backing forces against radical Wahhabism? And if I'm not even close, straighten me out on this.
Well, here's the kicker. The U.S. is on the same side as Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia is openly working with Al-Qaeda in Yemen. And so here's what makes no sense to the Yemeni population. The Yemenis have suffered from Al-Qaeda more than anybody else has. And we have the United States backing a Saudi-led coalition who is openly working with them at times. We've seen AP reports about how the UAE comes in and they just pay Al-Qaeda elements and say, oh, we need you to get out of this area, here's some cash, and then they declare a victory. Or we've seen footage of them by the BBC and Frontline working side by side, Saudi-led coalition people and Al-Qaeda militants working side by side against the Houthis who they're fighting in Yemen. And so, you know, if they're saying that they want to get rid of terrorism, well, then why are they working with terrorists? And this, you know, this vacuum of power that they've created in southern Yemen right now, which the Saudi-led coalition says they have control over, we've seen elements like ISIS arise, which we've never had in Yemen either. And so, you know, I think what we've created here is a situation that's dangerous, not just for the people over there, but for everybody's security and safety.
Shireen Al-Adeimi, is there anything else that you'd like to bring up that I failed to ask you?
No, I think it would just be great if your listeners would pick up the phone and urge their Congress people and their senators to support HCON Resolution 138 and SJ Resolution 54 in the Senate, because I think it's really up to us as the American people to stop this war that's continuing on in our name.
Shireen Al-Adeimi, thank you for coming on WMNF.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's Shireen Aladimi. She's a professor now at Michigan State University, and she's formerly a resident of Yemen, and obviously they're a peace activist on the question of whether or not the war in Yemen should continue. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And if you want to comment about this interview, you can email us in the studio here at dj@wmnf.org, or you can call us up, 813-239-9663. Well, I'm going to read a few news stories that you might want to comment about. Perhaps these are the stories we'll end up talking about as we open up the phone lines. The anti-Semitic truck driver accused of gunning down 11 people at the Pittsburgh synagogue on Saturday has pleaded not guilty to federal charges that could put him on death row. Robert Bowers was arraigned today, one day after a grand jury issued a 44-count indictment that charges him with murder, hate crimes, obstructing the practice of religion, and other crimes. Authorities say the 46-year-old Bowers raged against Jews during and after the rampage. It was the deadliest attack on Jews in American history. Websites and forums favored by far-right extremists are full of anti-Semitic, racist messages just days after those 11 people were murdered at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. Watchdogs say the sheer number of websites on the internet and the vast amount of content makes such words difficult to police, and the problem dates back to the earliest days of the internet. Just days before the shooting, a coalition of groups proposed a framework that organizers hope will lead social media companies to clamp down on their terms of service to reduce online hate, but so far, no company has announced that it will adopt the plan. An Associated Press investigation into migrant deaths and disappearances finds 56,800 deaths and disappearances since 2014, nearly double the current global total found in the world's only official attempt to try to count them by the UN's International Organization for Migration. The current, this year's total so far of deaths and disappearances of migrants is 28,500. Well, ahead of the midterm elections, President Trump is tweeting a video alleging that Democrats were responsible for allowing a convicted cop killer into the U.S., but the president is providing no evidence supporting that claim. The video is reminiscent of the infamous 1988 Willie Horton ad used against Democratic presidential candidate Michael Dukakis and condemned as racist. Trump highlighted the case in the ad of a man named Luis Bracamontes, a twice deported immigrant from Mexico sentenced to death in California for killing two police officers. The spot includes expletives uttered by Bracamontes during his trial, professing regret at not killing more officials. The caption reads, "Illegal immigrant Luis Bracamontes killed our people," and adds, "Democrats led him into our country. Democrats let him stay." That's what the ad says. And the ad goes on to include scenes of the migrant caravan warning, "Who else would Democrats let in?" Trump provides no evidence linking Democrats to Bracamontes in this latest ad. And President Trump has kicked off his final campaign rally blitz before the midterm elections by accusing the news media of sowing division and stoking fears about illegal immigration. Trump's rally in Estero, Florida, near Fort Myers yesterday, was the first of 11 events he'll hold across the country in eight battlefield states over the next 6 days as he tries to bolster Republican turnout and counter Democratic enthusiasm heading into Election Day. The president implored rally goers near Fort Myers yesterday to vote, and he painted a very dark picture of the stakes. Let's listen to a bit of what President Trump said yesterday when he was in Estero, Florida. Here's President Trump from yesterday.
Yesterday's visit to Pittsburgh was about coming together as a nation to comfort and to heal. After this day of unity and togetherness, I came home and sadly turned on the news and watched as the far left media once again use tragedy to sow anger and division. Sadly, they took a small group of protesters far away from where we were because we could not have been treated better, the First Lady and myself, but we're representing the presidency. And they did everything in their power to try to play it up and push people apart. That's what's happening. They're pushing people apart. It was fake and it was make-believe what they said. I came home, look forward to seeing it, and it was sad. And when we talk about division, this is a big part of the division right there.
President Trump blaming the news media for sowing division in the country. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. James Lyles is our phone producer today. And that was the president yesterday in Estero, Florida, just south of the Tampa Bay area. And what did you think? A small group of protesters far away from where he was in Pittsburgh. He complained about the news media coverage. Let's listen to some of that news media coverage. Here's one report that was on CNN just as the president was walking outside the synagogue in Pittsburgh earlier this week on Monday.
We're just a few blocks from the synagogue, and I think we're all a little shocked at how big and how quickly and how big this protest got. I want to show you sort of this is one protest that was coming up Forbes from this direction. There were maybe 2,000 people there by the end of it. And keep in mind, it was about 24 hours ago they started to organize this. Another protest group that was walking up the other direction on Forbes met this group, and then they all started marching. And it looks like they are taking a right down here on Shady. That way, another long block and a half is where the synagogue is. That is where President Trump is now. It is unclear what is going to happen. Certain parts of this protest just wants to be heard. They want to know that they are concerned with the president's words. Others want to disrupt things more. We are going to follow it and see where it goes.
Well, that was live as the president was on the ground in Pittsburgh, just a block and a half away from where the president was. The cameras were showing thousands of people on the street. That was a CNN report. You can see it online at the CNN website. The president, though, said that there was a small group of protesters far away from where he was. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. Well, we heard the president talk about the politics of division. And let's listen. Let's go to yesterday in Tampa at the University of South Florida, where somewhere between 700 and 1,000 people showed up to hear several Democrats running for statewide office, including Sean Shaw, who's running for attorney general, and Chris King, who's running for lieutenant governor, and Jeremy Ring, who's running for state CFO. They were all there, but they were the opening act to Bernie Sanders, the independent senator from Vermont. Sanders had this idea of a divided America on his mind, and this is what he said about political divisions in our country. Let's go to USF yesterday in Tampa for this part of the speech by U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders.
The United States, whether you are a conservative, liberal, whatever you may be, you understand that when you get to the Oval Office, your sacred duty as a president is to bring the American people together. Whether you are black or white or Latino, Native American or Asian American, we are all Americans. Whether you are a male or female, whether you are gay or straight, that the history of America contains incredibly positive and wonderful moments. In so many ways, we have been a leader in the world. But our history also contains moments and aspects that have not been positive. You all remember that when the settlers first came here, the terrible things they did to the Native American people. We all know that. And I don't have to explain to anybody here the abomination of slavery and segregation and racism. And all of you know that in America 100 years ago, women were third-class citizens. Women not only did not have the right to vote, they couldn't go to a university like this. They couldn't go out and get the job of their choice. They were third-class citizens. And all of you know that our gay brothers and sisters have to deny their sexuality because of the great fear of harassment, of what people might think of them. You all know that that throughout the history of this country, there has been terrible discrimination against Asian Americans, against Catholics, against Jews, against Italians, against the Irish, you name it. That's the bad news, but here is the good news. That throughout our history, going back to the very beginning, there were incredibly brave people of all races and all backgrounds who stood up and explained that we have a common humanity, that we are in this together no matter what the color of our skin is or where we come from. And have good lives. Doesn't matter whether you're a Muslim, a Christian, or a Jew, that is your aspiration. So I say to Donald Trump, who for cheap political points has been trying to divide us up, getting us to hate Muslims, or immigrants, or whoever it may be, we have suffered too much in the history of our country from all forms of discrimination. Mr. Trump, whether you like it or not, we are not going backwards, we are going forward.
Bernie Sanders, yesterday at the University of South Florida in Tampa, in front of a crowd of about 700 to 1,000 people, and calling for unity. Well, you heard President Trump call for unity in his way, and you heard Bernie Sanders call for unity in his way. Who's the more authentic? Who do you think really believes in trying to stop the terrible divisions in our country that led to the synagogue murder on Saturday and all the other crimes that we've seen against civilians in this country? 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Now here's one of 10, I'm not going to read all 10 emails, but here's one of 10 unsigned emails from Anonymous in the 352 area code. And Anonymous writes, I guess you're just going to keep broadcasting lies and hate about President Trump, huh? All right. I don't think that we broadcast any lies and hate about President Trump. We have played sound bites from both President Trump and from CNN. And we've played sound bites from Bernie Sanders. It's up to you to make up your own mind. Certainly it's not lies. This stuff all really happened. So it's not lies. I'm not suggesting anybody hate anybody, but I am asking the question, when you look for politicians to try to bring the country together, who has more credibility? And in this case, we've got two politicians up today, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. James Lyles is our phone producer today. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'll read, there are many more emails than that one, but I will read some of these emails too. But let's go to some of the phones right now. 813-239-9663. We're going to go to William in Lake Wales first. Hi, William. You're on WMNF. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you. I've been a friend of Catherine Price, who's running for the state Senate seat, District 26. For 30 years, and she's a very fine person, and set up a medical a free clinic in Haines City several years ago and ran it for a while. And she's interested in a number of issues, including economic development, public schools, support of them, health care for all, and protecting the environment and encouraging solar power.
All right, so you're a fan of Catherine Price, who's running for state senate. All right,
well, yes, sir. I'm working on her campaign as a volunteer.
All right, well, William, thanks for that phone call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks. And I'm pretty sure Catherine Price is a district, the one she's running for. It includes parts of Polk County, and then I think it runs down. I think all the way to Charlotte or Lee counties. It's a pretty big Senate district. All right, William, thanks a lot. Thanks for that call. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Dave in Tarpon Springs. Hey, Dave, you're on WMNF. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Hey, good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Wanted to touch on one of the news items that you mentioned. That was the one regarding social media companies and how they're going to handle hate speech on their platforms. And it just seems to me that we should not be at all eager to see private companies censoring speech on their platforms. I mean, as repulsive as the Nazis and hate mongers are, they have an absolute right to free speech, and they have an absolute right in this country to assemble. And, you know, the way to address them, I think, is to confront them directly, not to try to squelch them. And beyond that, when you start allowing the likes of Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos, so forth, to begin deciding what is hate speech, what's acceptable and what isn't, you're on a slippery slope that I think leads us to a place where we don't want to be. I think the great thing about this country is you have the right to express ideas no matter how repulsive they are, but it's kind of a marketplace of ideas. And most of us can respond intelligently to that. And that's how you persuade people. That's how you turn people, is through persuasion, not through censorship.
And Dave, you said you wanted to confront these Nazi and far-right groups. What do you mean confront?
Well, confront them where they are. I mean, if they go to the streets, meet them in the streets, nonviolently. Where I grew up, the Ku Klux Klan marched right down the middle of town, and we went out and stood on the sidewalks and counter-protested. And there were a lot more of us than there were of them. And the same thing's true on social media. You know, respond to them. But it's not obviously nonviolently, but you can confront them with your ideas and your logic. They're never going to be persuaded. But the people who might be swayed by them also might be swayed by people who are more reasonable and not hateful. And that's I think, how you've got to get it done. Otherwise, if you're going to squelch them, they become victims. They have a legitimate argument then that they're being censored. And that you can't allow that. They have to be able to express their ideas, no matter how hateful and repulsive they may be. We've got to allow it. We've got to be willing to let them be heard. And I just, you know, the more I listen, I hear more and more people who call themselves progressives sort of making the counter argument to this, that these folks should be censored. They should not be allowed to promulgate hate speech. And that just seems so anti-American and unprogressive to me. When I heard you talk about it, I just felt like I needed to call and say something.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thanks.
All right. And we don't know what the what those social media companies are going to do. I think at some point, we should devote show after show to free speech because Dave's right. One of the best things about the country is the First Amendment. Well, we can get deeper into it as those social media companies come up with a plan. We don't know what the plan is. David writes this, Trump showed his true colors when he bragged about how much money Saudi Arabia is spending on U.S.-made weapons. Trump does whatever U.S. president has done for the past 60 years. Kiss the ring of Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, etc. There's no greater greed or graft in the world than the tainted relationship between the Pentagon and the big defense contractors, writes David. David, thank you for that. 813 Unsigned writes, I think that Stormy Daniels should do a special pay-per-view TV show for adults only on November 6th. Stormy's Erection Day special, writes 813. All right. 813, thank you for that. We've got, looks like we might have one open line, 813-239-9663. And let's go to Bill in Homosassa. Bill, you're on WMNF. What's your thought?
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
You know, if you buy a used car, they got lemon laws against the salesman lying to you and selling you a pile of crap. I think you got 7 days to return it. For president of the United States, you ain't got no 7 days. You pull that lever, you vote, you vote. And I'm going to add this, and I'm going to leave you alone. But the cost that it's going to bring, what, 15,000, 5,000, whatever troops to the border, for nothing. How much health care could that actually buy for this country? I mean, I there's two standards in my life that I've tried to live by, Constitution and Ten Commandments. And this man warps those issues every day. And the people that stand behind him, and for the life of me, I'd like to have somebody explain to me where Donald Trump could be anything but what he is, a lying, cheating, the Antichrist, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, Bill, are you more scared of those refugees that are marching through Mexico than you are of ISIS?
Heavens no.
So we're going to have more troops on the job on the border, along with the Border Patrol, along with Customs. We're going to add troops to that mix, and we have fewer troops battling ISIS in Syria.
My son, when Katrina hit New Orleans, was in the Guards, which he's got to live in. But anyway, they sent them down from Indiana, a whole big bunch of them. They met in parking lots at the Walmart and would coordinate which next town they was going to go to. They weren't doing nothing, just running around down there burning fuel and wasting time. And exactly what's going to happen down there. And as far as those people coming here, what, they're 2 months out before they're
yep.
going to be?
Yep, they're 2 months away.
And he'll have those troops down there before Election Day, I'll guarantee you that.
At a big cost. At a big, big cost. All right. Bill, yes. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Great to hear from you. Glad we could get that off your chest. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Looks like so far we've got only men calling in. So if you're a woman, you could get through right away by calling 813-239-9663. Let's go to Robert in Tampa. Hey, Robert, you're on WMNF. Thanks for calling in.
Can you hear me?
I can, Robert.
You know,
on.
I just want to point out, you were talking about Bernie Sanders. I'm a Vietnam veteran, okay? I served my country in the time of the draft and everything. Do people realize that he filed as a conscientious objector to avoid going into the military? And yet, although he filed as a conscientious objector, he tried to be president. How could you be president of this country if you're against all wars?
Well, Robert, I was alive during Vietnam, and this is what I thought about Vietnam. That we were getting involved in the middle of a civil war that we had no business going into. And it wasn't that the Chinese or the Russians were going to eventually take over Southeast Asia. Pardon me, Robert. It's that Ho Chi Minh was a very popular leader, and if there was a vote in Vietnam nationwide, he would have been the president of that country. But we were interfering in domestic politics. Now, why was it right for us to interfere in Vietnam? I mean, didn't Bernie Sanders do the right thing?
When he's called for service, for military service, to decide
what if the war is wrong? I mean, don't you have a conscience? What if the war is wrong? I don't think that everybody who goes in the military who wants to fight is right. And some people have a conscience. Do you have a conscience?
War. That you're called by the
Robert, do you have a conscience? Robert, do you have a conscience?
I have.
Did you think about that war before you signed up?
About the people I was with that died there. Okay, and then we have all these people in our government that all avoid.
But Robert, that war was wrong. Robert, that war was wrong.
That it has nothing to do whether the war was right or wrong. At that time, nobody knew.
Well, then, are you a robot? Why would you fight in a war that was wrong? Why would you sign up for a war that was wrong? It was flat wrong. What? Give me the justification. Why was that war right?
Ask John Kennedy. Jack Kennedy started.
Robert, why was that war right?
Why did Jack Kennedy? Because he felt that it was.
Kennedy didn't
send security and everything.
Kennedy sent advisors, but he didn't send.
Whether it was right or wrong,
it was a wrong war. John Kennedy sent military advisors, and towards the end of his life, he thought it was a big mistake to get more heavily involved. He was not pushing for an expansion of the war, you know. So this idea that somehow, you know, everybody should just sign up for the military and do whatever the president says, I think that's wrong.
So anybody can decide not to serve or to serve when the country asks you to serve.
Sometimes the country makes mistakes. I'll give you a good example. We invaded Iraq. It was the biggest foreign policy mistake we ever made, at least in the last 20 years. That was wrong. People should stand up and say, you know, sometimes the president's right, sometimes the president's wrong. And when the president's wrong, you in the military should say, the president's wrong, I'm getting out, or I'm going to sign up as a conscientious objector. You know, you shouldn't just go along with every war the president tells you to fight.
Show what he did. Why doesn't Schumer show what he did? How they avoided the draft.
Schumer opposed the war. You know, Schumer started as an anti-war activist. You know, so you know, at some point we got to stop all the wars. The war in Yemen right now, do you think that's right? Come on, Robert, you know, get a conscience here for a second.
Put me on the line.
No, you know, you're
lost, okay?
Okay, Robert, tell us why the war in Vietnam was right. All right, thanks, Robert. You know, if I think we have, as a country, have to decide whether or not we want to have endless wars. We have been in constant wars in my entire lifetime. There's been very few times where we've not had U.S. military abroad in something. And not every one of those occasions was right. Central America. We armed the Contras in Central America. We had advisors in Central America in the 1980s. It turned out to be wrong. We ended up supporting military governments. Well, that wasn't right. So at some point, you can't just give a pass to people who say, well, I signed up. Some people said were more courageous, and they said, I'm going to risk everything, and I'm not going to go. So they risk their careers and everything. You know, I feel for the guys and the gals that went to Vietnam, but I think it was the wrong war. And I don't think that even after 40 or 50 years, you can say it was the right war. You just can't say it. Let's take some more phone calls. Let's go to Patty in Largo. Hey, Patty, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to address first the Bernie Sanders comment that he was a conscientious objector and somehow that makes him un-American or not a man or not eligible for president. But his work with the Veterans Affairs has been very extensive and long, and he's devoted a lot of his life to working for veterans. So the problem I see just across the board every day that makes me just want to cry sometimes is people's lack of understanding of history or knowledge of history. The wars, Vietnam War, we went because, you know, Vietnam had colonized them and they were sick of them and they wanted them out in Vietnam. And the French were struggling and we had kind of let them down. So the history with them is, okay, we'll come over, we'll help them. They sold the Vietnam War to the American people with communism, the threat of communism. And they sell us wars like we're sold other things. You know, for a while it was communism, the threat of communism, which in some ways was legitimate. There were some areas where, yeah, it did take hold. But getting involved in other countries' business, we only do it when we have either something to gain, a resource, oil, a military base that we need a little jumping off place to get somewhere else in the world.
Or a military industrial complex that needs profits.
Well, and that's the other thing, yeah. Is that the military industrial, and who warned us initially about that?
Eisenhower. Yeah.
So again, people just, I get so sick of listening to ignorant people, and I'm serious. I'm they're in my family. I have to love them, and it's my own, you know, my own children. Some of them, and my extended family, and just, you know, people that don't understand, we have nothing to gain as citizens, as just the everyday American people, from the results of a lot of these decisions and this sham of, you know, pride and Americanism that's going around now is just it's so, like I said, you know, it's so just discomforting to me, just so. It's scary. And people, when they make, you know, intimations of like, okay, this is like Nazi Germany, it really is. Like, it really is. And it's in so many ways.
All right.
Well, and that's it. It's just,
Patty, thank you very much. Thanks for your phone call.
Uh-huh.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. 501 writes, I think 45 is jealous of the amount of people who are protesting against his nasty talk. They're all much grander in size. This person is saying that the protests against Trump are very grand in size. Sarah in Largo writes, my own opinion with this lesson about who has more credibility, I've learned over and over again throughout my life, it is so important. And it requires critical thinking about, but action speaks louder than words, always, writes Sarah. And 813-239-9663. Regarding the credibility question, Rick writes, thanks for the show. Unfortunately, credibility is ignored. Trump supporters know they're being lied to. But if their stocks and 401ks go up, they don't mind the lies. Did the tragedy at the synagogue change one vote? Did Hurricane Michael change one vote or one mind about man-made climate change? That is the horrible reality of what's happening in the U.S. now. Not the credibility in and of itself, but that credibility does not matter. That's Rick, who's in Parrish. Rick, thank you for that. We got one open line, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Kathleen in Clearwater. Hi, Kathleen. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Well, this morning I was thinking about how President Trump always comes out with a new shiny object to distract. And if you go back to this rolling wreckage that is his administration, go back to when he separated those children from their parents, and there are several hundred of them that are still not reunited with their parents. Never a positive resolution. Then you can go on up through all the other disasters. But let's just focus on the last month, okay? We had the murder of Khashoggi, a U.S. resident, by the Saudis in their consulate in Istanbul. And we have taken no action against that. No condemnation by the president. No outrage whatsoever. And as a matter of fact, yesterday they were having, day before yesterday, the Saudi prosecutor was in Istanbul trying to find out what the Turks knew, and they know it all because they had that embassy wired. So that was never resolved, and it's a murder, and we have not changed one iota of our policy towards that. So then you come to the bombers, the bombs placed, sent to 15 people who were critics of Trump, by a Trump devotee, if you will. And that's gone. Republicans just sweep it off. Okay? So then we had a slaughter in a synagogue of people who were killed because they contributed and helped Pius, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. They were murdered because they were kind and generous to the refugee. And that is now supposedly swept off. And so our new concern is that we have hopelessly desperate people who are south of Mexico City walking to our country to seek asylum.
Yeah.
And
well,
President Trump, I'm not finished yet. He's decided that he's going to declare a national emergency and send 15,000 troops down there. And here's the problem. In 1976, Congress enacted the National Emergency Act. He's not even supposed to do that without addressing his rationale for it. And now I'm done.
All right. Well, Patty, Kathleen, rather, thanks a lot. Thanks for the comment.
You're welcome.
All right. Good to hear from you. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Here's an email from a Vietnam vet. He says, I'm a Vietnam vet. This is Bob in Lakeland, and Bob says, go Bernie. All right, Bob, thanks for that. Let's go to Nathan in St. Pete. Hi, Nathan, you're on WMNF.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I don't know where to begin other than I just want to thank every single vet out there that has served and put their lives in front of their standards, basically. More importantly, there's a lot going on in the world today, and it's a very important time, and we all, as Americans, I'm an independent voter, by the way. I don't like the Republican side. I don't like the Democrat side. I just want to encourage everybody to get out there and vote. No matter, this is a big, big vote for our state, Florida. It's very, very important. And everybody needs to get out there and vote. One last point I'd like to make is nobody knows that this gentleman that was assassinated in Istanbul is actually dead. I honestly believe that he's still alive and that they're terrorizing somewhere. I can't say that for certain, but in this day and time, you can never.
Nathan, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. I think it's pretty clear that he's dead, and I think it's pretty clear that a lot of credible people believe that there's an audio tape of his killing, and apparently it's pretty brutal. And the head of the CIA is going over there right now. My guess is that she'll probably listen to that audio tape. We'll find out. eventually. Captain Tim writes, it galls me to know that my tax dollars have to pay for the president and his expensive entourage gallivanting around the country and campaigning for his cronies. This is wrong, and the taxpayers should not have to pay for it, writes Tim. And Gail writes this, I believe the daughters and sons of the Confederacy can no longer stand for the Confederacy because it's been exposed as wrong. White supremacy is the root of this wrongness and also needs to be condemned for storing up hate and thus hate crimes, writes Gail. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. So if you want to comment about the program, call that number. And I'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for the Midpoint program with the Surly Feminist coming up right next here on WMNF.